Morton, Devil's Peak, Dusty up the mountain is chilling a bit. Weather got a bit cooler. Promise of light rain. It has done the light rain thing. Let's see where it goes to from here. In this week's African Mirror, it's our weekly edition on Newsbeat, Ethiopia officially inaugurated Africa's largest hydroelectric dam, the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam on the Blue Nile River. The dam has always been a controversial question, especially for Egypt, who are downstream with their Aswan Dam. And of course, but this dam, though, is expected to produce over 6,000 megawatts of electricity, turning Ethiopia into a power exporter. Wish that was us. Online, Dr. Paul Kariuki, Executive Director of the Democracy Development Program at the University of KZN and convener at the Africa Policy Circle. Dr. Paul Kariuki, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show, and good afternoon to your listeners.
GERD, as the dam is called in Ethiopia. I don't know how much we're going to be using that acronym. GERD sounds pretty weird. But for some time, Egypt has been in a fuss about this. We know that they have been trying to take legal action and so on and so on. So where do we stand right now with the dam? Because Ethiopia says, well, they've got a right to the water as well.
This is a very interesting aspect of it, Shafiq, because finally, after that tussle back and forth over the years about who owns the dam and why should it even be in the first place, be established and be built around, it has been inaugurated. So it's kind of a sweet, bitter thing for Egypt, because almost like they have lost the whole fight that they've been having in the first place to, you know, kind of stall the building of the dam and, you know, kind of influence discussions to their favor, because the contestation is around the shared use of water and the implications that it will be for Egypt because of the diversion of the dam and all that. So I think at this point in time, Egypt has to refine its own strategy on how it's going to get back into these discussions, because guess what? The dam has been inaugurated. Ethiopia is already on the limelight and is enjoying what it's doing. And we saw, for example, the East African countries, South Sudan and Kenya already, you know, saying how they're going to fast track to buy electricity from Ethiopia now that they have a neighbor who can guarantee security, energy for them and you know, create economic opportunities for both countries. So the loser here in the meantime is Egypt. Ethiopia is winning and making history.
And of course, I mean, it's interesting historically, because Ethiopia and Egypt are very, very, very old countries.
Yes.
With massively long histories. So it's not just a simple, it's not just a question of modernity, because there have been contestations of the Nile going back for centuries, for millennia, if you start to look at history and walk
yes.
backwards up the Nile. It's not a new question.
It's not a new question. And I think here, maybe in hindsight, Egypt lost momentum in trying to put exacting enough pressure to either stall the completion of the dam or completely, you know, ask for diversion, because I think it lost political momentum in the sense that there was no support, significant support from the African Union, for example, to kind of intervene with Ethiopian authorities to say, this cannot continue because it's going to cause a lot of problems with our neighbors, and kind of, you know, influence negativity between the countries that are affected by your development agenda. Ethiopia was left to run the show. And for whatever reasons, African Union was missing in action, because it could have been the only mediator in this conflict so that it does not get to a place where it was going to exacerbate the tensions between the two countries. Now that Egypt has been left alone, it has to find a situation where it can be able to renegotiate now this time around as a beneficiary, other than now a blocker of a development agenda, because a lot has happened and now they've been left without anything to do with, you know, with the dam. So I suspect they are going now to relook at their diplomatic, you know, approach to this matter. See if they can be able to negotiate with Ethiopia now in terms of access to maybe even electricity at a subsidized kind of tariffs, You know, somehow something has to give way so that Egypt will be at peace. Otherwise, we're going to see perhaps a new level of political tension between the two countries. And at the moment, there is no proper mediator if things really get out of hand in this situation.
Are there any third parties, as it were, involved, for example, in the actual construction of the dam? Because Ethiopia obviously can't just do it completely on their own.
Yeah, well, we've seen the United States, for example, had tried to intervene, and it didn't bear much fruit, especially at the mediation level. I remember representatives of the two countries, Egypt and Ethiopia, being invited in the White House to go and, you know, talk about the dam and other related issues when in the former administration of President Biden. At the moment, it doesn't seem like President Trump is interested. But of course, now we know our biggest partner on the continent is Chinese government. I'm sure when things really get to the thick of things, China will be involved in one or another, because the other alternative organ that could have intervened outside of AU is the East African Cooperation. But now you can see East African Cooperation is already divided around the matter. Two of the member states they are celebrating, Kenya and South Sudan. So there is no room for mediation here, because there is countries that are already benefiting from the initiative, and there are countries who are still thinking maybe this was a wrong move, and there's countries who are waiting what will happen out of this, and they jump in because, look, the entire region is an energy insecure region. For all this developmental agenda, it will require significant input of energy into the economy. And then also the second factor is that there is a significant size of their population that is not do not have access to sustainable electricity supply. So I'm suspecting even the other countries that are not coming, you know, open to celebrate what Ethiopia has done, are waiting for this perhaps, you know, proverbial dust to settle down. And they'll come in to negotiate how they can access electricity, because all those countries around the region there, in East African region, need electricity to prosper their economic growth agenda. And so it leaves an external actor like China to be the most immediate mediator should the tensions between the two countries, Egypt and Ethiopia, really go to another level. And remember also, China is also very deeply involved in Egyptian infrastructural development currently. I was there last year and I saw significant influence of industrialization and road networks and all that is happening in the country, sponsored and funded by the Chinese government. And since it's the only common denominator between the two countries, that is Ethiopia and Egypt, if really tensions escalate to a place where regional bodies cannot be able to handle, I think the next thing we're going to see is Chinese government involvement to try to bring some level of peace.
On the positive side of the question, because obviously I have no idea about the environmental and other aspects of the Nile and the dam in Ethiopia, obviously if Kenya, northern Kenya, southern Sudan, Ethiopia, etc., become energy secure, there's another question, and that is there have been talks of the river in the Congo also being dammed, and that the Congo itself could become another major energy center. And if we have Ethiopia and the Congo, for example, on the map, it means that most of sub-Saharan Africa is not going to be as energy insecure as it is today, which is big, isn't it?
I agree with you 100%. I think that positive spin-off there attracts a lot of attention from very different angles. Inside the country, the populations will be very happy to see that it's a possible alleviation of a pain that they've been, you know, endured for so long. The idea that they cannot be able to gain, you know, electricity, access electricity, because of the challenges that their own countries have created in their own, you know, states where they, you know, kind of been reduced to nothing over the years because they're not able to access electricity. So the possibility of having to gain, to buy electricity next door, of course it will appeal to citizens from a political point of view. What it does to the rest of the political landscape is that it creates tensions between the current administrations and those who oppose excessive expenditure on energy, while in-country infrastructure is not being developed to support electricity access, which is what we are seeing in most countries. The infrastructure is still very much old. It's probably as old as the colonial system that was there. And then, of course, the issue of affordability. The tariffs within countries are almost far away from people, ordinary citizens, affording them. And so it's a double kind of a double-edged sword, a celebration of possible access and alleviate problems that, you know, countries have endured or citizens have endured for many decades versus affordability. And then that is even more complicated by an aging, infrastructure that has not been paid attention to. So the careful balance between the current administration and the political tensions within the countries is one is going to watch very closely and how it is, you know, it's going to play out. Because currently, the only thing we have seen, the celebration is coming from heads of state, not from citizens of their country. And these are two different things that cannot be conflated, because the priorities at the national level could be positive, but the reception in country level could be exactly negative because of the pressure that people are already feeling on the cost of living that has gone so high. And part of that cost of living is because of increasing electricity tariffs that are beyond what people can afford at the moment.
And of course, I mean, that is literally the million-dollar question. If this energy rollout is going to be effective in Africa, it is going to have to be cost-effective, something which a lot of energy dispensers are not always very sympathetic to, because for them it's always the shareholders and the bottom line.
Exactly. And that commercialization of electricity has become a talking point for our continent for so long, because at the end of the day, the people who pay the brunt of all this discussion are citizens. And most of the time they're left with without cushion when these discussions do happen at certain times without even their consultation. There's no enough public consultation on which way should governments go in terms of negotiating useful and affordable tariffs. So for me, the issue here is that can countries, inside countries, political leadership consult with their various stakeholders to protect the interests of citizenry when they negotiate this kind of tariffs? Because it always becomes a source of tension, and it creates bad blood between neighbors because of a national issue that ordinary citizens have very little influence over, because it's a process that is done at a higher level than they can be involved. So one can only hope, from a goodwill point of view, that as the heads of state celebrate this milestone, they will be conscious to engage significantly stakeholders from within their own country to see how best can they be able to access this possible electricity back into their grid, but make sure that it's actually affordable and not as a punitive measure to their own citizenry.
And we're going to watch the space very closely. Where is it going to take us? Will sub-Saharan Africa and the Sahel be energy secure areas? The Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, called GERD for short, has taken off on the Blue Nile. Of course, is the Aswan Dam in Egypt, and of course, possibilities in the Congo as well. As always, a special thanks to Dr. Paul Kariuki, Executive Director of the Democracy Development Program at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and convener at the Africa Policy Circle. African Mirror will be back next week, same time, different topic. Dr. Paul Kariuki, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Afi, for having me on the show.